Covering the latest news in women's baseball, this is the Women's Baseball Network Podcast.
Welcome back, everyone, to this edition of Women's Baseball Network Podcast. This is Jimmy Hartz, and as always, producer Phil Kessel.
Hello.
Welcome back, Phil. And joining us today will be 2004 USA Women's Baseball team catcher, Judy O'Brien. First, I guess, tell us a little bit about you, where you've been, and where you hope to be going.
What's your journey?
Good one. I was going to say, I'm a lot former, a lot of things. my journey started, I guess, I grew up playing softball, so I'm not one of the ones that started with boys baseball, but I certainly was impacted by it because although I was lucky enough to have, you know, softball league just for girls in my area, my town, you know, it was pretty evident early on that it wasn't equal opportunity and it wasn't equal facilities or coaching or any of that. So that probably started my days of dreaming about baseball and then, you know, becoming a fan, watching the games. I grew up outside of the Philadelphia region. And so watching the Phillies, and I was, strangely enough, with my Irish heritage, a Red Sox fan early on. So I first got the opportunity to really play baseball when I got out of college. And because I went to school on a D1 scholarship. So I was, you know, head on softball all through and thankfully turned that into a way for me to get a free education, which has carried me. But I still always had that love of baseball and wonderment about it. And when A League of Their Own came out, it actually spurred a bunch of women's teams, travel teams, pop-up leagues. And there was a resurgence in girls and women across the country wanting to actually play baseball. And I got an opportunity to join a team called the, I think the first team was the Philadelphia Strikers, suburban Philadelphia, and then the Mid-Atlantic Pride, and had an opportunity there. And that actually started, we had some people doing fantastic marketing. So I got to play in almost every minor league stadium in the tri-state area of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware. And I even played at the Vet. So I've played in different major league stadiums, the Sky Dome. I've played in Tropicana. I've played in, like, just very neat, very amazing experience.
What was your favorite of all the major league parks that you played at? I assume Veterans Stadium because that's your hometown.
Yeah, I loved the Vet. That was great. And to have local, you know, support. But also, like, the Sky Dome is so iconic. That, and it's just so overwhelming that was awesome to be there. And I'm a catcher, so I was using that to my advantage. When people step up to the plate, I'd be like, right as the pitcher was about to go into their motion, I'm like, hey, you see yourself on the big screen? Strike one. You know, like, thank you.
So can I interrupt you here really quick? I have a quick question. So if I understood you right, you never really played baseball prior to college?
I mean, in the neighborhood.
Okay, so, you know, one of the big things that I always hear is there's no way that a woman can transition from softball to baseball or vice versa. I mean, I've seen it. I know it can happen. My daughter's one of them that can make it happen. Did you find that to be a hard transition going from, I'm guessing, fast pitch softball to baseball?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm going to say, if they're a good athlete, they can all do it, right?
Right, true.
And they do, right? Nobody, look, I'm from the era, nowadays kids specialize from, like, I don't know, 10 years old on into one sport. I grew up, I went to school, I had a scholarship for volleyball and basketball that I went to a junior college before I even went to Temple to play softball. So, you know, I had, you know, multi-sport. But yes, there are differences in it for sure. And one of the biggest adjustments is hitting and timing because of two things, the distance from the mound to the plate,
yeah,
and the ability and strength of the pitcher of how fast they're throwing. So, which has gotten better over the time. We wanted to talk about that because I've been involved in baseball for a couple decades. I've seen that in the sport. But it's funny that you brought this up because one of the things that when I saw a note about, like, what's changed, I think about the first – I played on a local team. Well, I shouldn't say a local team. I played on a tournament team, but most of us were local to Boston, right? That's how I got to know some of the other Kevin, Janet, Donna, and I up in Boston, and we picked up some people here and there, but one of the very first national tournaments we went to, Roy Hobbs down in Florida, we had filled in, we had like 9 or 10 players. I think we had 10 players, and like 4 of them were softball players that had never played baseball. We were just trying to field a team. And I said to Kevin before that tournament started, like, we have 5 or 6 solid baseball players. I go, our first 5 hitters are going to have to average over 500 to win this tournament. And, or maybe I said 400, our first 4 hitters, 400. And I think 5 or 6 of us hit over 500 in that tournament.
That's amazing.
Now, doesn't say much for the pitching of the tournament. That's definitely an area I've seen improve in the coming decades. And I do think more of the women playing baseball today actually grew up playing baseball with the boys, which is cool, because that didn't happen much at my age. It wasn't an opportunity. They've pressed, they've made room for those opportunities. Girls have had that chance. And you're seeing more of, I'm seeing more in women's baseball, girls that said, hey, I played Little League, and then I got kind of pushed into softball to try to get a scholarship for college, and now I'm back to my first true love. I fell in love with it all over again as a player, as opposed to a spectator, because I was a catcher. And to be a catcher in softball is very different than a catcher in baseball. Well, nothing happens until the pitcher starts to move towards the plate. So first of all, you got runners tied to the bag. They're not allowed to leave the bag until the pitcher starts their motion. So that whole play is out.
You're saying in softball, they're not allowed to leave the bag.
Correct. In softball, if you step off of that bag and make a motion, you can be called out towards second base if the pitcher's standing there holding the ball. It's not until they start their motion that you're allowed to break towards second base or leave that bag. So that leaves, I say the rules are a lot looser, right? That leaves a lot more interpretation of the pitcher having to hold the runner on, the catcher, all of that. I mean, even just that one thing changes the dynamic of the game in so many ways. When you think about the movement of shortstop in second, trying to hold a runner on second, or a pitcher having to deliver their times. A softball pitcher doesn't have to think about anything but what I'm throwing. I don't think I have to think about changing my stance, like a whole nother motion because there's a runner on versus when there's not a runner on. I don't have to think about varying my time to the plate. All I have to think about is, you said changeup, here's a changeup. You said fastball, where am I locating it? That's it.
You know, I've never thought about that.
Me neither.
Recently, I got begged to have my daughter join us at try out for a women's fast pitch team here locally. And I was like, yeah, you know, let's do this. Let's just see what happens. And we were doing all that, but it never clicked in my head that they were holding onto the bag. I never thought about it the whole entire time. It's funny you say that. Now that I'm thinking back to that day when she was going to that tryout, and yeah, they were. And it's funny you mentioned the hitting portion of it. That was the thing that she struggled with the most, because her first game is baseball.
I'm curious about how the transition is the other way, because I think a lot of baseball, you know, they say that baseball is like a longer swing. So if they go up against a good fast pitch, they're like, whoa, it's on me. And how do I have to shorten my swing to get on it? And for softball to baseball transition, you know, everybody's pulling the ball left and they're out on their front foot and they're not. So I was lucky enough early on, one of the women that played with us, her husband had played baseball professionally. And I started to work outside of the team with her and her father-in-law, who taught him and him. He would throw, he was a pitcher, so that was good. He threw BP to us a lot. And his father would work with me. I just remember him saying, sit, wait, let the ball get on you, let it get on you, sit to hit. And he was actually the first one. In fact, I learned so much in those first couple of years playing baseball. I almost wanted to go back to softball to leverage some of that skill, because he taught me about, I never thought about like hitting it where it's pitched, I guess. I don't know how I got through D1 softball. I mean, a little bit, but like about the fact that like if it's inside, you're going to turn on it more quickly, and you're really almost like the three. Yep. This is hard to explain on the radio, but right? Like, I'm going to hit it 4 or 5 inches in front of the plate if it's an inside pitch. If it's a down the middle pitch, I'm going to hit it on the plate. And if it's an outside pitch, I'm going to actually hit it behind the plate.
Isn't that crazy? So
yeah.
With that being said, she was panicked about that, because when she saw how close the pitcher was, I said, Joss, it's no different. Like, all you have to do is get the timing down. While you're sitting here on deck warming up, watch one, two, you know, and practice that stride of the one, two, get your timing down.
Yeah, there's a lot less load in softball.
Yeah, well, and she finally picked up on that. When she did, she started ripping it. And when she realized that, okay, I don't have to fully like hitch and just explode on it. I can sit on it for a little bit less of a second and just go at it. And when she figured out that timing and that speed, she was making solid contact with it. And I'll be honest, she came off and said, Dad, can we go back over the batting cage and hit baseballs? And the baseball coach comes over and goes, she plays baseball. I said, yeah. He's like, we have a spot. And I'm like, no, we're committed to somebody else. But yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's tough. But see, with softball also, she could probably just use that stride forward and the rotation of her body, because the ball's so reactive and light and shorter fences, you could put it out with that, you know? So
all she was doing was a shorter stride and just basically moving the body through and letting the bat make contact in it. And when she finally realized that, it started clicking. It was good.
I'll tell you another big difference people don't realize, and you don't know it until you're out in the outfield. So a softball, the trajectory of a softball, it's a bigger ball, more drag, it's lighter, so you can't throw it as hard either, but it goes up. A softball trajectory goes up, hits a peak, and comes down like a perfect arch, yeah. Right? But a baseball kind of goes up and hits the peak and kind of stays at that for a while. Yeah. And I don't know, it'd be interesting to have it graphed so you know, but when you're in the field and you're an outfielder, you know the difference, because your body learns how to like anticipate where it's going to be. And when you go from softball to baseball, you go to where it's going to be, and you're like, oh, crap, it's still going. Like, yeah. Hold on. So the travel, the way the ball travels, maybe because of the weight of the ball or less drag, but definitely noticeable difference in the outfield around how to do
I
that.
I know from playing competitive, higher grade, slow pitch softball, the big thing was to cut the bottom of the ball, to get that backwards rotation, to keep it aloft more, which seems counterintuitive, but you're putting a backspin on it to keep it aloft more and keep it going further. So that's a big thing that I've noticed the difference of with a baseball. It's just grip and rip, and that thing, you're right, it does, and I never thought about that. It does hang, and you're like, that's not coming down where I thought it was going to come down. Start moving faster. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the principles of drag, but that was one of the biggest transitions I noticed. Listen, in college, softball, I started a game in college softball in every position except for pitcher and first base over my tenure.
Wow.
Right? So in the 4 years I played college softball, I literally played in a game or started a game in every position except for pitcher and first base.
What was the scariest position?
Third base.
I was going to say probably third.
I spent a long time playing third, but it still never is real comfortable.
Oh, so you had good hands then. That's why you played third.
Yeah. Well, I started out, I was a freshman, and most of our team, there was only two freshmen on the squad, and I started out in right field. So, because I'm quick and I could read sort of the flares, right?
Yeah.
And then I progressed to center field. And then our center fielder and was our shortstop. We kind of traded off, which is a weird combination, but sometimes I play short and she plays center, and sometimes vice versa. And then my junior year, our catcher left. So they asked me to catch, and I was freaked because I had never done that. It was like spring training. I had like 4 weeks to get ready, and I was just not in a good place, but I did love it. And I complained about it the whole time. And then my senior year, my coach had said, hey, I recruited a catcher, so you don't have to catch anymore. But by then, I went back out to, you know, and I filled in all these other places. But I went back out to center field, and the other freshman that started with me was our senior pitcher. And so when she was throwing, I still called all the games, and the coach never even knew. We got halfway through the season before the coach found out. Because there's a freshman catcher. She's like, I'm not letting this. I was calling the games from center field. Because awesome. He said, I'm not going to let this freshman catcher call these games. She doesn't know these hitters or anything. So the pitcher, it was kind of natural. The pitcher would turn around, like get the rosin bag, look at me. I had like a sign or whatever. And then she'd turn around and she had a sign she'd give the catcher. So the catcher thought she was calling the games.
But
she was getting the sign from me in center field.
That's amazing.
I bet she was thinking, oh man, I caught a great game.
Wow. So that kind of leads us into going into the women's baseball. So when you started catching, because you caught in the 2004 World Cup, Is that kind of what like made you jump into that when it came to baseball, or how did you end up catching in baseball, which led
to try out for this team? So I, you know, was out of college. I was playing women's majors, ASA majors, fast pitch. I mean, I played fast pitch at a high level. We went to nationals. And I saw the opportunity to go play. I saw an ad in the paper or something to go play for this women's baseball team. I tried out. And we were playing, it was in like Delaware County, Pennsylvania. And the guy that was the, Paul Moda was the head coach, and he coached the Delaware County Community College men's baseball team. And his mom actually played in the All-Americans Women's Professional League. So he tells stories about learning to play baseball, him and his brother out in the backyard with his mom, and the mom going, come on, you can't throw any harder than that. I don't need my glove. She'd throw her glove off and catch the ball from him.
Do you know
like
who
antagonize
was?
Them on to get better at baseball.
Do you know who the All-American was?
I don't. I wish, okay. You know what? I recently got in contact with him a couple years ago. I should hit him up. I have to hit him up on Facebook or somewhere where I got back in touch with him to ask him his mom's name because I didn't
That's
think about
cool.
it. But we didn't have a good catcher. And I was, you know, playing second or short and pitching, you know, doing the stuff I want to do. So it wasn't until he like pleaded, like, can somebody else catch, that I was like, all right, maybe I can, you know, I've caught before. But I will say this too, they taught me a lot more about catching and a lot better movements around kind of like the semicircle of getting your body turned.
Yep.
And blocking, like, because what I was taught with softball was sort of like a drag a leg, and it wasn't.
Not effective at all.
No, and I don't like the dirt. So with softball, this was part of the reason I was miserable catching, because the ball's in the dirt a lot. And baseball, it's not in the dirt as much.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but he basically started that. Then that was when I really loved catching and loved being in control of the game. Again, you as a catcher, you're calling defensive plays. You're, you know, doing more. You're more involved in, you know, helping the pitcher manage the runner, throwing out, keeping them close. You're more involved in controlling the game, and I really like that.
So my daughter, when her knee isn't messed up, she catches, and I told her, I said, you know, I call it the command and control, because you are in command and control. You can see the whole entire field, whereas the second baseman mm-hmm. may not be able to see the left or the right, whatever, but you can see the runner on first and what that runner's doing. Mm-hmm. You can give them a signal, whatever that little hint is, hey, this is what's going to happen. You know, and surprisingly, from the time she started really catching at 9 years old up till current, has always called her own games. And I told her, this is what you do. And her and I'd run through scenarios. If you have a count and you have this, what are you doing here? Where do you waste a pitch? So on and so forth. And she loved the idea that it was, in a sense, a command and control. She
yeah.
had full control of that field at that moment.
I once got in a fight with Skip Bertram, for decades coach of the LSU Tigers, many world championships. He was also big on the mental side of the game, started the rubber band snapping thing and the toilet flushing and all. And I ran into him at a baseball convention, and we got into an argument. He needed a ride home. We got into an argument about, I said, why don't you let your catchers call their games? And he gave me his reasoning about how he knows the league, he knows the other coach better, what he's going to do and all. And I just said, okay, I get it, freshman, sophomore year, but, you know, it's part of their experience of the game, and it's their development. And I just can't, we're just going to have to agree to disagree. Like, you know what I mean? Which he, I think, got a big kick out of, like, who are you and where, what yeah. is your baseball experience? And, you know, I was just like, I'm just telling you, I couldn't play for you. I'm going to call my game as a catcher. That's all there is to it. And I actually, Marty Cementelli's dad, when she first played with the New England Red Sox, came in and we were heading into a championship game. I come down to breakfast, Kevin ambushed me, and Marty's dad comes over, sits down, and he goes, hey, I want to talk to you about something. And I'm like, what's that? And he goes, so I'm going to call the game today. And I'm like, I hadn't even had my coffee. And Kevin's laughing. I just look at Kevin. He's dying laughing. Like, I told him, and I go, listen, if you want to call the game, then you get that gear on and you put your ass behind the plate. But otherwise, if you're not willing to do that, then I'll be calling the game.
Nice.
And that's all there is to it. And he's like, okay. I said, if I get stuck, I'll look over to you for some help if I need it.
You know, I always found it funny when other coaches want to call, like, they call the game. And that's, and at younger ages, that seems to be the forte, right? Because I take it upon myself to figure out what the signs are. you know, and they got these wrist straps now they wear, and they'll be like Nevada Golden, you know, or whatever. They'll be calling out these strange names, and I'm like, all right, Nevada Golden. So I'll write down Nevada Golden, and I'll see what the pitch is. And I'm like, all right, next time he calls. So then I start yelling out numbers back, and my players start to know that this is what they're getting ready to pitch, or this they're getting ready. And then I try to catch their signs. They'll be like, blue 24. I'm like, all right, they're stealing on the second pitch. You know, and it becomes a game to me now that in an older age. And I did it when I was younger, right, too. I'd sit there and try to figure out the strategy. And like you said, it's the mental aspect of it.
Yeah.
So what,
yeah, it's fun.
With that 2004 era of the World Cup, what was your most memorable moment of that?
That's interesting, because 2004 was a kind of a rough year for me on it. It was the first year USA Baseball got involved, but it was not the first year we had international competition and that type of stuff. So
yeah, before that was the World Series, not the World Cup.
Is that correct? Yeah. Not know that.
Yeah, the World Series was in 2001, and that was the first time we had the USA, Canada, Japan, and Australia, and we played in the Sky Dome in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
And that's very memorable because we had a different coach. Jim Glennie had developed the team. I had my local coach, but he had his – Jim was making the lineups, and then Ron was coaching it, and Ron was who I played with up in New England. And then finally, like the last – day, like the semifinal, they let Ron do the lineup or something, and then there was a big shift in the thing when he finally let Ron go, like, look, I know we're struggling to find our rhythm, let me do the lineup. And then we were like gangbusters. And so we had played Japan and lost to them twice. The first game legit, the second game we didn't need it, so we rested our players. So we got to the final of that, and Japan said, why are we even playing for a medal? We've beaten this team twice. We should be the gold medal winners. And they said, hey, this is the way the tournament works. And we beat them 9-1. I had three triples in that game.
Wow.
And shared a co-MVP with Donna Mills, who went 4-for-4 with four RBIs.
Wow.
Because I hit in front of her. I was on third. She hit me in every time. I was on third. She hit me in, you know. So we had and so what was memorable for me is we were warming up for that game, and my pitcher, Deb Straczynski, was the best pitcher I've ever caught, because she could go, I'd go, give it to me here, and then I'd move my glove an inch over, give it to me here. She'd hit it. I'd move it an inch. She'd hit it. She had Greg Maddux control, and it was so fun because I would watch the hitters and find what's the weakness in their swing and then leverage her pitches to exploit it, and it was great. And she very rarely missed the payoff pitch. So I remember her having a terrible warm-up, and I just remember feeling like, we're going to win. That's it. We're going to win. Like, you know, like you have a good warm-up, you struggle in the game, you have a terrible warm-up, and you're like that. I just had this feeling come over me. In fact, I started singing, we're going to win. We're like Stillwell in League of Their Own.
Yeah, that's funny.
I knew it. I just knew it. And so that's what's memorable for me, is that it like dawned. And I just remember like relaxing and having a lot of fun. 2004, different story. I was in a different place mentally. I was struggling with my game, and, you know, I was trying to find ways to help the team and for our team to come together. But it was so exciting because we got to travel. You know, we had the World Series in Japan, and then we came home and went to the World Cup in Edmonton. And we had games in between it, and it was just so tight because we spent so much time together that we were like on the road together for 8 weeks, like straight.
Wow.
Yeah.
That team. And
that's a rarity nowadays. I feel like the USA team gets together like once or twice before the 2 weeks of the World Cup.
I think a flaw in the program. These other programs, by the way, and why now we're not. We had the talent, we had the horses that were carrying it early on, but now their program dedication and strength is outweighing ours, because you can't just come together and throw a team. The whole outweighs the parts, right? Especially in baseball, because of the communication. So in those early years, we did well because 6 or 8 of us played together all the time off season. So we already had the core of the team, had that communication and understanding of who's going to be where, when, and what your role is. And, you know, hey, Goody, you know, I always hit in front of Goody, and she knows Judy gets on, I'm going to take a pitch because she's going to steal, and then I'm going to hit behind her because I'm a lefty. And, like, we had our thing worked out. So I think that's a big issue and why we're not one of the world leaders anymore, is that these other teams pick their team 6 months ahead and come together, have them on the same fitness routines, nutrition routines, practice drill routines, and they work on it throughout the year. And we need to find a way to do that if we're going to compete.
Yeah, Japan usually has their team picked out in November, and the tournament's like in September. It mm-hmm. was crazy to me. And plus, on top of that, most of their players are in that pro baseball league that they have over there. So the communication's always there for them.
So what was the frequency of this? Like, was this every year they were doing this, or was it every 2 years? What was the frequency of
the World Series? Started out, it was every year. We did one in 2001, 2002, 2003, 2004. And then that was the first year of the World Cup. So then I think they were going to do them both every other, like World Series year, World Cup. But I don't even know how long the World Series stayed in there. So World Cup then was every 2 years. And now, as you know, they just announced that they're going to move to a different format.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That brings us to the elephant in the room of the WBSC announcing that they're changing that format of the Women's Baseball World Cup from a two, which will become a two-stage tournament, and then shift from two-year cycle to four-year cycle. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, I have my own opinions on it, but what, I mean, you being there and having gone through what you went through, that's a big gap. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
It is. I mean, I think that, you know, you look at it two ways. Maybe that gap helps the U.S. close, you know, the difference of, you know, 4 years going by for them with their team, but maybe not, because they just have that much longer to work on it to be together. But I think it does open up, you know, the idea. I don't like it being 4 years apart, but I do like the idea of them building in an infrastructure for more teams to come in and more qualifying, so it's more quality play. So I like the idea of the continental qualifiers. And then, because we started out, as we said, with four teams, and then, you know, it grew, and there was like maybe four teams in that first World Cup, or six teams. We had Chinese Taipei and some other, and then India, and then like it snowballed in Venezuela and the Latin countries, and that's awesome. I love it. But there is probably a really big difference in skill level and ability. And so I do think there should be those qualifiers, and it opens up an opportunity to have international play, hopefully, like every year. I don't know.
Yeah. And so I'm reading here that, you know, the end of the group stage, each group's top two finishers of those, you know, continental qualifiers you're talking about, will then move on to the group stage of the Women's Baseball World Cup, which is going to start actually next year in 2022. So that's going to start the whole upcycle, if you will, to lead to the finals, which is scheduled for 2024.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because people's career, you know, we're not making a living doing it. So you also have to work and support yourself and other things. So I think it's going to make it that I was lucky, I guess. I got to play in the 2001 World Cup. I played in the 2003 World Cup, 2 and 3, I think. No, 2001, 2002, skipped 2003, 2004. So, and then had more, you know, I got to play in many, many different international and national championships. So I think it's tough to spread it out 4 years like the Olympics, and say that, you know, that's usually, you might have one shot, you know, at the year that you have international competition or not.
So I think maybe you just said something, or the whole topic is bringing up something with me, and you're part of American Girls Baseball. And to be honest with you, the three of us, we all are. Phil and I do this on the side to kind of help keep notoriety to what's going on and updates and things like that. Do you see and believe that if there was the ability to establish professional, if you will, play women's baseball, that this could be the answer to facilitate that team?
Yes.
Kind of like the Olympics. Maybe that's what it was. You said the Olympics, and maybe that's the answer. I mean, and do you think it is possible to be able to actually establish a paid league that would be viable?
I think it's more possible now than ever with the amount of women that we have playing across the globe, internationally. Yeah. That increases the candidate pool. It increases the ability, you know, I don't know if we talked about it before, but a big thing now, right? If I can see her, I can be her. So if we have that out there for women, when I was growing up, I couldn't dream of I didn't have professional women's basketball players. They didn't have professional women's volleyball players. They didn't have, they had women's golf and tennis. That's it. Team sports. Well, golf's not a team sport, but they had the, they didn't have any kind of ability for us to look up to that. So I think there's more interest globally in baseball and more women are playing it. I think if we can get a higher level, we don't have it at college yet. But if we can get a pro league or international, higher international competition more frequently, then that gives them something to look up to and helps the sport. And quite frankly, I think with the way social media is now and communication across the world, there's no better time for us to say, let's have a league in the U.S. And maybe we have a, maybe we have an international series that way that you have to qualify out of the U.S. to get to go to the World Cup, right? Yeah. And you have to qualify so that now we're building more depth to it and more opportunity for women to play and coach and everything else, right? Spectators. I think if we can find a way that we can monetize it, which is the big problem, then we can create those opportunities for women. And it's a little bit, if you build it, they will come, right? They're already out there, but we're not capturing the interest because there's nowhere for them to go. So they have to then just go get a job and either do it on the side or whatever else. So,
yeah, I mean, in reality, there's enough minor league, independent league stadiums. I mean, you said you grew up here in Pennsylvania and, you know, within a stone's throw of me, and I say stone's throw, within probably 30 miles of me in two or three different directions, there's an independent league stadium, which will seat several thousand people. So they are all over the place, and it's just a matter of being able to get that backing, you know, whether or not it's corporate backing from several big companies that that see an interest. You know, I think it's there. I honestly can say I'd love to see a league of their own again. I mean, it's, yeah, you know, my daughter tries out on Monday for the seventh grade baseball team at school, and she will be the third female. And hopefully the third female that makes it. So
nice.
She's had two years prior to her, and we'll see what happens.
Let me ask you this, because people always pose the argument of like, well, I mean, you're always going to have Major League Baseball, and they're going to be better than the women, so why would I watch? Why do you watch the Little League World Series? Look at how huge that's gotten.
Yeah.
Right? With fans and televised. Why? Because at their level, it's good competition.
They
you see those guys make plays. You don't know what's going to happen. It's exciting. They hit it out. Right? It's the same thing. Women's golf, a lot of people go appreciate women's golf because the men's golf, their physical ability, you go, I'm never going to be able to do that. But I can watch the women's game and learn how to get better at my own game in golf because it's more of a finesse.
Yes.
Same thing with women's baseball, I think. I think that, you know, there's room for all of them. And hey, Major League Baseball is starting to hire more women and see that they bring value to the game. You know, football, other sports are realizing that, you know, our minds work differently. We connect differently, men and women, emotionally. There's value in the human relationship of, I mean, sports at the end of the day is challenging yourself to get better, right? And is that experience of what are my limits and how can I push my limits and what can I be? And then the support system of coaches to build up how much my success relies in helping somebody else achieve that and how can I do that? And so we all relate about that differently. And I think that the more that we can realize that, you know, we're really not that different, you know, there's differences that can help each other and there's more value, then maybe they'll support it. And maybe they'll realize they need to support it because women control most of the household dollars. And if they want to continue with the marketing and all the other money they got coming in, maybe they should ingratiate the female aspect of fans and players of the game.
Preach it.
And quite honestly, I'm all about watching something new. You know what I mean? And not that this is new, but it is. I mean, it's how long has it been? I mean, well, heck, the last World Cup, was it 2020, right? Because last year got, no, when was it?
No,
2018.
Yep.
2018.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Because down in Sarasota was the camp.
It should have been 2020. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Wow, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's right. It should have been 2020. That means, so it's something new, you know, and I can't not forget, like, hurry up and get home, scramble to find the game on YouTube to throw it up on the big screen TV at the house. And we all sat down as a family and watched it. And to watch some of the plays that were made. And even at the younger levels, when I go to these these big, you know, tournaments that, like, for example, baseball for all holds, I see some young ladies from around the world playing, and I think to myself, most boys I watch can't even pull that play out of the rear end.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, I'm coming up out of my seat, flipping out, watching some of these plays.
Right.
Because it's that exciting.
Yeah. I think what's cool too is it gets back to the roots of it. You're playing for the enthusiasm of the game, right? And so we love watching the kids play too, because all their emotions are written right there on their face, victory and defeat, right?
Yeah.
So same thing. I think the women, you know, they would love an opportunity. Most of them, it's, you know, they're not going to make a huge living, but they want to do it. And you're going to see, I think that's probably something even back in, you know, a league of their own days, in the All-American League days, they probably enjoyed watching the women's exuberance to play and get paid to do something they love. And it brought a different joy back to it than the stuff that you got going on with professional sports these days in the U.S. and what they've turned it into.
They wanted to put on a great product, and you can tell by just them getting strawberries every day and getting up the next day to play, even though you still had this patch on your rear end.
Right.
They said in the movie, they play with broken fingers and they still play because they want to stay on the squad and they want to put on a good product.
Ride on the bus all night and then play. And yeah,
play a doubleheader the next day.
So how was that for you guys? Cause you talked about how you played all over the place. I mean, what kind of travel accommodations and accommodations did you guys have?
Well, you know, again, we talked about the difference of being overseas. Depends on who's hosting, right?
Right, yeah.
We had the 2001 World Series. We went, we had good accommodations in Canada and, you know, team hotels. When we went to Japan, it was pretty evident, though. We went to Japan in 2004 for the World Series before the World Cup. And, you know, over there, they're huge fans. So we were treated like kings, and it was fun for us. That's maybe that's the most memorable thing of that 2004. It was not necessarily what happened on the field, but to see how excited, I mean, we had a 3,000 state stadium filled for the final, packed. That was pretty cool. I have a really neat photo of me, like, from behind, somebody took of us, me standing in the bullpen, and that you can see all the fans and the lights that was really neat. And people stopping us on the street, seeing posters up, people waiting for autographs, just that whole part of the cultural experience. So we were treated very well over there. 2003, we had the World Series in Tropicana, or in Florida, and the final was in Tropicana. We played at the Lightning, maybe, minor league park. We had most of the games. We slept 6 in a room.
Wow.
Because we had to pay our own way, and a couple people backed out, or something happened with one of the rooms, and two of our players were like, we can't afford this on our own. So we had air mattresses in our room while the leadership of the U.S. State team that year actually paid for the best Australian player to come over, her travel expenses, and paid the week of pay she was going to lose by missing work.
Wow.
So big variance, you know.
My God.
And that tournament, 2 hurricanes rolled through. We had a lot of rain today, but that also led to a really good memory of sitting in a dugout one time with like about 3 inches of rain on a tarp, and us just deciding we're going to do it. And we all just ran out and started running around the field on the tarp and sliding and having a good time.
That was Hurricane Francis and Jean. Cause I know that, cause I bought my house in Orlando, Florida, and the hurricanes were like back to back. And it was a mad scramble to board up the windows, unboard them, reboard them, and unboard them. I absolutely
remember. Trying to have a baseball tournament.
Wow. That's crazy. You know, that makes me think, as you're sitting here talking, just that story you told about the 6 to a room is, you know what, God willing, someone of a higher authority hears this. Is like, you know what, this is a piece of the pie that I want to get in on. Mm-hmm. Who's going to step up and say, I'm going to be the sponsor. I'm going to do this. Let's make this happen. You know, if you're out there, I welcome you to contact American Girls Baseball. We'll be more than happy to help you make it happen. But
that's right.
But you know, that's absolutely incredible. Like, you don't think about that, like the accommodations and what strides you as a player or a team will go through get the hunger to eat on that field and play the game.
You know, yeah, I mean, we were paying our own way. I mean, I'll say this. We wouldn't have a Team USA today if it wasn't for Nick Lopardo, who stepped up and funded it for us, for USA Baseball, to say, okay, let's have a women's program. We probably wouldn't even be, you know, involved on the international stage today if it wasn't for that. You know, we were playing these teams. Australia and Japan have, like, press corps and all these other people following them, and we're sitting here going, you know, I drove from Boston to Toronto, Canada, to go to the World Series, and I, you know, had to pay my own way, flights, and, you know, stay six in a room down in Florida, and so we've seen all aspects of it, you know?
I'm surprised the Olympic Committee hasn't started to open their eyes up a little bit and say, hey, maybe we got something here, if we can do something with this.
Yeah. I never did finish actually the first question, because we talked about how I got started, but I also, you know, I've seen the whole gamut, because I got a chance to play in that women's, the ladies professional baseball league. I got paid $1,200 a month, which was pretty good, because it was about what an average, I think, minor league, A-league ball player made at the time. And we actually stayed, we had a room, we had an apartment, we didn't have any furniture mostly, so we had three in the apartment. And there was a bunch of girls. We had four players from California on our team. They stayed four in an apartment. We were all in the same apartment complex. And then the two Japanese players came and they joined them. So they just had one whole room with air mattresses that they slept in the other room where they had all their clothes. And somebody donated them some patio furniture to have a table to eat at. And that was the pro league when we were living in Hamburg, New Jersey and playing. But like I said, you do what you have to do to make it happen. And I'm thankful for the people that have stepped up and funded it or had an idea and tried to carry the ball. And as you know, as part of American Girls Baseball, we're trying to pick that ball up and carry it down the field a little bit further and see if we can't continue to press. We have made strides, although it's been crazy rocky ride. We've made strides. And, you know, today you're seeing women in baseball in different aspects, and the play has improved, and there's more countries. And yeah. So it's a war of attrition, I guess.
Well, I'm out of questions. And I mean, and I can't tell you I've known you now for what, almost a year, and didn't have any idea that much about you. And I appreciate you taking the time to share that and your sentiments, and you're looking forward to seeing it happen.
Thanks for having me on. It's always fun to relive.
Well, you're welcome back anytime. If you're ever bored and, you know, we're having a podcast, hey, can you get on? And you're welcome to jump in and be another spoke in the wheel to drill somebody else with some questions. Because we got more of you on the board, too. We still got to talk to. So we got plenty of conversations.
That's right.
So
thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
No worries. Hey, thank you very much. Go have a good time tonight, and we'll talk to you soon. Now let's check out our game notes from around the world. The 2021 American Girls Professional Baseball League Players Association reunion that was scheduled for September 10th through 12th has been canceled due to the safety of the players and not knowing what the COVID situation is going to be like at that time. Phil, I know you're heavily involved with them. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, obviously, I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, definitely.
They aren't exactly spring chickens, if you will, though they act like it every time you're around them.
I know. But I completely agree with this decision, and I think the idea is to do some kind of Zoom meetup with the other associates, so it stinks that we won't be together physically, but at least we'll get to check in with the players and see how they're doing. I haven't talked to Janine Lesko in about a year, and she lives in Washington, actually near where the epicenter was at that time started. So it'd be good to see everyone again, and I think the idea is to do something in 2022, and maybe a bigger announcement is going to be down the line.
That'd be cool.
They're working on stuff behind the scenes, so stay tuned, everyone, and be sure to become an associate member and support. I know, like, membership has dropped drastically this past year since everyone's kind of strapped for cash due to the COVID situation. But yeah, any way you can help the Players Association and American Girls Baseball, what we're involved with, we're the subsidiary group. So any donation to help out what, because I know the All-American players, they want to help out the next generation of players, and that's why they formed this subsidiary group, the American Girls Baseball League. And so that's why we're doing it. We want to help them out as much as possible, help Susape, who's the president and former Rockford Peach. So get out there and donate, people. We need to bring this thing back into full circle.
Every little bit helps. And I'll tell you what, I don't know, Phil, if it's about doing like a Zoom reunion. Might be a decent idea to get outsiders in. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like open that Zoom up and get people invited. Just come and hang out. And all of a sudden you got 60 people up on your Zoom screen. You know, I think that'd be a pretty cool idea.
Yeah. Like some kind of like big event where, you know, you have like a discussion among the players and like associate members can be outsiders looking in. Because if you have like 600 people in one Zoom meeting, it'd be kind of
It'd be tough.
Crazy.
It would be tough. Yeah, I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah.
So again, thank you, everybody. I'm Jimmy Hartz along with Phil Kessel. You heard Judy O'Brien. We look forward to doing this again more often now that obviously baseball's back up. We're starting to see the spring training happening and baseball all around the country starting to fire back up. And COVID, stay away. We need this. It's been a long drought of sports, period. So thank you, everybody. Have a good day. Have a good rest of your day, good rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.